This is a quick summary. So the oldest Homo sapiens discovered in Ethiopia, 195,000. KYA stands for thousands of years ago, like kilo, okay? Homo sapiens arrived in the Arabian Peninsula about 125,000 years ago. 85,000 years ago, they were in Europe. 75,000 years ago, they reached Indonesia. And here's the interesting part. Not only did Negro Arab Homo sapiens live in Europe 40,000 years ago, but as recently as 6,000 years ago, everyone in Europe had black skin. Yeah, I'd never seen that before. But it makes sense when they're all coming up. Now, what propelled the change in skin color? All humans need the sun to survive. One of the things that, if you've had a physical in the last couple of years, most doctors in America are seeing that we have a vitamin D deficiency. Okay? And I'm like, are you kidding me? I ride my bike. I'm outside all the time. But it's like, no, you need more. And they're seeing this across the board. Okay? So we need, that's one of the things we need. But too much sun, anyone have skin cancer? Okay, right? So too much sun is not a good thing. So if you are living in an equatorial region which has the most sun, it's better to have dark skin, lots of melanin, because you don't need to absorb that much sun, and at the same time, you don't want to have cancer. But in low-light latitudes, especially as you get up into Scandinavia and so on and so forth, human skins over time thinned so that they could receive greater doses of sun. Okay, but it also subjects you to skin cancers and that kind of stuff. So it's literally an adaptation over time to the physical areas that you're living in. Now, I love it when science comes back and agrees with the Bible. I don't see the Bible as a science book, but I like it when there are things that the Bible has taught forever, because people have misused the Bible for forever to make it say what they want it to say. Genesis 1:26 says, "Let us make human beings so that they are like us." I mean, one of the things that I had to deal with as a young adult Christian in seminary was that I grew up just, no one told me this, but I just assumed God was Caucasian. Like, you know, you try to imagine God, and it's just like, this is a white guy with a beard, right? And then one time, one of my Asian friends goes like, so, you know, the Bible doesn't say that God has a race. This is still believing there's more than one race, right? It's like, so why not imagine God with an Asian face, right? They got this skinny little Ho Chi Minh beard, you know. Like, man, I'm having fun. I realized that I had been raised on Greek mythology, right, and all that kind of stuff. So to step completely back from all of those human layers and say, God, when God said, let us make them in our image, all of the variety that we see now after all this time in the human race is contained in the image of God. One of my friends put it this way. He said, so maybe it was like when God first created the human race, however you want to understand that, it was like God looked in a mirror and saw God's reflection perfectly. But then with the fall, what happened? Someone dropped a mirror. Okay, now what happens when you drop a mirror? Shatters, okay? So you pick up any part of the shattered mirror and you only see part of the reflection of God. And he says, historically, especially with the influence in Christianity of white, Western, German, British theology, we've basically only looked at the white part of God's image. And so, again, this impacts people like me, because that's how I grew up on, right? We go buy our Sunday school materials. We don't assume there's any kind of racial white normativity or whatever. And so I grew up having self-hatred about not being white. Yeah, okay? So I just found my slides from my 1997 trip to find my village, my family's village in China. Okay? And that was a big deal for me, because up until that trip, I disavowed ever being from China. Because nothing to be proud about there. Okay? And I'm just glad I'm from California. Okay? So when my wife and I decided we're going to make this trip, my next brother, who married a Caucasian from Alabama, he says, why would you want to go to China? There's no culture in China. Yeah. He goes, go to Europe. Okay? Well, that's how we were raised. So I couldn't judge him, but I was not there anymore. And I said, I know it's unsanitary. I said, there's no 5-second rule in China. When you drop something, leave it. You know, you don't blow it off, you know. But to then make the trip 4 hours out of Guangzhou in this little car with an interpreter and a driver, and find at the end of the last path past the last rice paddy was this old man in a white t-shirt. And I brought this one piece of paper because there's no street names or addresses. And it had my grandmother's name on there in Chinese. It had my dad's name. And then my aunt wrote in Chinese, and this is this man's oldest son. Right? So I showed this guy. He goes, yeah, that's me. I'm like, all right. So then he says in Chinese, so which one of my aunt's sons is your father? And then he said Chinese names. King Wu, King Pu, King Chu. And I'm like, well, there's James. And then there's Frank, and then there's Henry, okay? So I vaguely am familiar with those Chinese names because my grandmother would use them, but I don't know what my dad's name is, right? So then we go inside this farmhouse, and it's got packed dirt floor with a straw-fed walk and satellite television, okay? Because they wanted to get the soap operas or something, right? And lo and behold, on every wall of their farmhouse are pictures of relatives in America, okay? So I'm looking at these pictures, and I see a picture of my Ningen, my grandmother, sitting on our Sacramento sofa. We have the same picture. And I'm like, that's my grandma. He goes, yeah, that's my aunt. Right? And he goes, which one of these, her three sons? Right? James, Frank, Henry. So then I found a picture of my dad's youngest brother, my Uncle Henry, because he goes to the village because he's really into this. I go, that's not my dad. Right? And he goes, oh, that's, and then he's saying the Chinese name. All right, one down, two to go. So as we're still doing this process of elimination, my wife is looking on her own at the pictures, and she goes, hey, isn't this a picture of you? I'm like, what? What would I be doing on a farmhouse wall in China, right? And look, we have the same picture. It's me in like sixth grade. So I'm like 11 or 12 years old, and in those days, you dressed for Thanksgiving. Remember those days? Right? So I had a white short-sleeved dress shirt. I had a little clip-on black tie. And I'm way on the end, and there's the matriarch in the middle, my grandmother, all the grandkids, all her children, right, and all the people they married. But this picture is old, okay? And so there's this crack that's going across the width of the picture, and right across my face goes the crack, right across my eyes, right? And so the eyes are kind of the window to the soul. You see the eyes. So they couldn't see that that was me, but that was like a life changer for me. Like, I came all this way, and I found my picture hanging on a farmhouse wall in China. And I'm like, thank you, God, I didn't grow up here, because my life would be very different. But it's just changed me forever. Like, I still identify as an American, but I definitely have roots in China. And then when we subsequently went to stand on the Great Wall, I had this whole different experience. It's just like, this country is so much older than America, right? And so I felt a good pride that I don't have to be embarrassed about, okay? But I'm telling you that this whole thing of only looking at God through the one shard has messed up a lot of people, okay? Now, I owe a lot to my African-American brothers and sisters because even though they're very much in the minority at Fuller Seminary, for some reason, they have a different sense of identity. And so they'll take a church history class, right? And they'll go, how many books on black church history are required reading? And the white professor goes, none. And they'll go, is it because the black church has no history? Or you just don't deem it relevant? Okay? I took American church history. I know we're the Asian American. My church was started when Abraham Lincoln was president. That's how old the church I grew up in. Okay? The church I just left, it's 100 years old. Okay? But as an Asian American Christian, I don't even ask the same questions that my African-American was. Then it's time to take the preaching class. Guess what happens? So the black students go, excuse me, is there going to be a course on black preaching? Because I'm from black church tradition. We have our whole way of preaching, right? And the white professor's like, no, I'm teaching you the standard way of preaching. Okay? So if the black student gets an A learning that way and they go back to the black pulpit, guess what's going to happen? They get laughed out of the pulpit. It's like, you just read this thing. It has 3 points that start with the same letter. It's like you lost the whole kind of rhythm and kind of sensibility of black preaching. I took those same preaching classes. I never said, where's the Asian American preaching class? Okay, so I developed it based on how I've been preaching to you now, right? And then the Asian American, we don't have a way of preaching. I'm like, well, I've been working on it, okay? So that's what I'm saying. It's really interesting. I really get a lot from my African American brothers and sisters. Now, This other part, just two verses later, after God said, let's make humans in our image, and it has all this potential to have all this diversity, then he issues what some call the cultural mandate. He says, God bless them, be prosperous, reproduce, fill the earth, and take charge. So God was basically saying, in order for people to know all the elements of me beyond that one shard, you need to cover the earth. And as you cover the earth, you're going to have different languages, you're going to have different facial characteristics, cultures, and that's all going to give me greater glory. Well, then we get ahead of about, 10, 11 chapters to the Tower of Babel. What happened there? They all spoke the same language, right? And they're like, we ain't going anywhere else. We're building this big old tower, and we're going to glorify ourselves. And God said that wasn't the mandate. The mandate was to spread, and so I'm going to confuse you all. I'm going to introduce all these different languages because I got to see my mandate fulfilled. So rather than seeing multiculturalism and all these different ethnicities as some kind of threat, which I think many times it's perceived, God said all of that, if you understand it correctly, points back to me, that no one racial group, quote unquote, owns me. Now, what else does the Bible tell us about race? Nothing suggests or supports how the concept has been used for the last 500 years. For instance, I'm sure you've all studied the Bible for a long time. There's very little physical descriptions of people. The one is that the group of giants, right, that we think maybe Goliath came from. But other than that, I mean, there's not a lot there physically. There's never been a rigid ethnic boundary to the people of God. The issue has always been one of faith, not DNA. Okay? Who do you follow? Who do you believe in? Have you renounced your idols? Revelation 7:9, there's an uncountable assemblage of every ethnic group, tribe, people, and language. So I tell people, if you're not comfortable with multiculturalism now, boy, you're going to hate heaven. Right? So then I kind of took on a different understanding of my role as pastor. It's like, even though our church is historically Japanese-American, there's now more Chinese-American coming. There's 8 other Pacific Islander groups, plus white, black, Hispanic, and bad language, multiracial people. And I'm like, okay, this is all rehearsing eternity. So you start wherever you start, but you better kind of break out of your little lanes because heaven is going to be amazing. Revelation 4:10, while cultural backgrounds will still be there, every achievement and distinction will be cast before God's throne in worship. And finally, absent is any remaining identification on basis of a human political entity or anything suggested in our word race. There's not going to be any tears or sadness, and certainly no races. Now, one of the questions that I wondered about was, when I get to heaven, how am my grandmother and I going to recognize each other? Okay? So I was in a class, so I started to do my own study, and it's like, it's interesting because on the one hand, part of the joy of heaven is knowing that you're present with the people that you love and who love you. Like, if you don't know who each other is, it just seems, I mean, that's part of the promise, right? But then I think, oh, you know, my grandma died when she was 94. Does she have to be like 94 for eternity? That would really be sad, right? And it's like, and I was like 19 when my grandma died. How's she going to recognize me now? Okay? And then I was looking at the Road to Emmaus account. Okay? So Jesus was able to change his appearance at will. Okay, remember when he was talking, they had no idea who they were talking to, and then he sat down when they broke bread, he was like, oh my gosh, right? I don't think they just had amnesia. I think Jesus was actually able to change his appearance. We know that when the disciples were all huddled in the locked room, that Jesus was able to actually go through the wall, right? I think heaven is a non-physical place. It's a different dimension. I think there is some individuality there, just going from the biblical record, but I don't know that we are kind of stuck at a certain age or even ethnicity. I do hope that in the moment that I appear in heaven with my grandma, I'm going to look 18 with my pimples, dang it, okay? And she's going to look 94 with her long braid and stuff, and then after we're checked in, it's like all that is gone. It's like it has no relevance in eternity. So anyway, these are interesting questions. I don't know that I'll have ethnicity, in heaven, but I just know that it's going to be better than what else. Yeah. Now, just to be on the good side, way back, even in the 16th century, there were some Christians that were fighting against racism. Father Bartholomew de las Casas who was sent to the Americas, as he got to know the Native Americans, he developed a Christian case against the concept of races. And he says, by you and I having a theology that says Native Americans are not from Adam, and therefore we can enslave them and wipe them out, is like, I know that's wrong. And so he actually is revered as a saint in certain Latin American countries. And then anyone here a Quaker? Okay, well, Quaker evangelist John Woolman in the 1700s fought slavery and racial concepts undergirding it. But they were fighting in those days a losing battle because of the prevailing mentality and attitudes. All right, now on the home stretch here. Therefore, if we are one human family, some simple conclusions. Then there's no such thing as an interracial couple. Right? Now, not that long ago, it was even against the law for people to marry outside their race. Okay? Outside their race. So when someone says, oh, that's an interracial couple, I go, human and what? Right? And the thing I was telling the teens yesterday, I said, you know, if you think about dogs over centuries have been raised for certain characteristics, right? So you want a hunting dog? You want dog with long legs and water, the dog that's going to get your duck that you just shot, dog that likes to swim, dog that chases rats down burrows, has really short legs, right? Those kind of things. But they can trace the genetics of dogs to common canine ancestors, okay? But each one of those dogs can all have puppies with each other. I actually saw a St. Bernard Chihuahua mix. And I'll just leave it at that. Okay, but the fact that they can all have puppies, they're all the same. Yeah, let's hope so. Good birthing hips. Yeah, on that St. Bernard. So anyway, I think this is less of an issue, but it's not that long ago, and I think we all grew up at a time where not just white people, but just any people of an identifiable group, pretty much, especially if you have immigrant parents, they wanted to stay in their ethnic lane. And then some of it is language and culture and all that stuff. But some of it was not good. It was actually prejudice, if not racism. And there's no such thing as a biracial or multiracial person. Just had Meghan Markle marry into the royal family. And a lot was made about her ethnic, you know, background. But, you know, I would say now to the royal family, it's like, well, 6,000 years ago, everybody in England was black, you know, and we're all from Africa. So what's the big whoop-de-doo? Tiger Woods, you know, it's been time now, but people forget that Tiger Woods is half Thai. Like, his mother was full-blooded Thai. His father was African-American, I think some Cherokee and something. But the way the media and everybody kind of see him is like, well, you're black. And for a while, he was fighting that. He says, I'm Kablan Asian. He's like made up a term. Like, he's like, quit trying to put me in one box. But, you know, I find myself even in the beginning, I was like, oh, we have an Asian-American really good golfer. Right? But then my eyes would see a black person and then hear all my African American friends go, no, he's black. Right? And I was like, dang it, we lost one. Okay? So all of that, you know, is called into question. Even the concept of racial reconciliation presumes that there's more than one race that you have to reconcile. Okay? Now, I'm friends with some of the champions of Christian racial reconciliation, and so I've been needling them. I'm like, you know, your language, which you've made your money on and, you know, your reputation on, you're perpetuating a falsehood that there's more than one human race. And he's like, quit talking to me. You're confusing things. Yeah.
We have an au pair from Argentina. She came through. She said, I had to write. I've never had the question asked before. I came through customs. Like, am I white? Am I black?
Right.
Am I this? We don't ask those questions.
Right.
In Argentina. So even the system.
Yes. Right. Yeah, non-Hispanic white, Hispanic white, well, that's a category. The other thing that I'm learning too, another. Well, now they're letting people check anything that applies to you. And right away, like some of my African-American friends feel threatened by that because they feel like, well, if you're not just black, but you're all these other things, that's diminishing our percentage. Right?
Well, my husband is from South Africa, so technically my kids are
African-American. Oh.
I don't think anybody
yeah, right. Yeah, that's right. 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 You had your hand up?
Well, I was just going to say, our very first word
impressive. Oh, absolutely.
Always referred to as the first black person.
Right.
But he really was white.
Right. Black. Right. He's like my nephew. He's biracial.
Well, you know, one thing I wanted to tell you is today, interestingly, in the Catholic faith, is the feast day of many Chinese missionary martyrs.
Huh.
Chinese who
Today?
Yes, today.
See, no one told me. Interesting. Yeah. Oh, wow. Right.
Every race, color, creed, people,
yeah.
Filing up, it's just only in Jesus. And we didn't
right. Well, the banquet table, right?
Yeah.
It's like it's his table, and he sets it, and he'll go to the highways and the hedgerows, and he'll invite people that we will exclude.
I loved your thing last night.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Pray in a certain way and make yourself uncomfortable.
Yeah. Did anyone do that in this morning's prayer meeting? Oh, I love it. Oh, okay, oh, that's fine too. Just put the other hand on top. All right, we're almost done. I like this out of John 17 because this is so powerful. The goal is for all of them, the future Christians, us, to become one in heart and mind, just as you, Father, are in me and I in you, so they might be one heart and mind with us. Then the world might believe that you, in fact, sent me. Jesus predicted that one of the ways that the future non-believing world is going to be drawn to him and the gospel through the gospel is how they'll know we are Christians by our love, right? I mean, we've been singing that this week. It's a supernatural family. Most of what happens on Sunday mornings is a natural gathering. It's when human beings clump with like people, okay? We did that in high school. Okay, so what causes people to go, what's going on here, that doesn't look natural, is when people, and it's not just race, right, but it's socioeconomic, it's education, it's all these, I talked to some immigrant Chinese churches that most of the people are pretty well off. You can just tell by the college stickers on the back of their cars in the parking lot, okay, Duke, Harvard, Penn, and they'll go, well, you asking us to speak Spanish, learn how to speak Spanish? So that the Puerto Ricans down the street come, I said, no, not necessarily. I mean, you could. I said, but there are people who are Chinese who speak your dialect, but they work in the back of a restaurant, right? And they chain smoke cigarettes. And you don't have to learn another language, but socioeconomically, educationally, they don't feel welcome at your church. Just driving to park their car, they already feel less than, right? So can you agree not to put those stickers on your car? Can you agree to not wear all those USC shirts, you know, whatever? I mean, there's a time for that, but when we gather around the table, when we come, we shouldn't be separating into tribes, right? We should be coming together. And that's a tough sell because there's all this kind of natural human desire. But Jesus said, that's how people are going to be drawn to me when they see something that they can't explain naturally. This is something supernatural. All right, last thing here. I don't want you leaving this workshop saying, okay, we listened to Ken, and he said that we're in a post-racial, you know, sort of thing. Race is going to continue to be an issue because I think we're simple and we're sinful. And so even though we have this information and we know it's scientifically, historically provable, it's like we start where we start. The world starts where it starts. People are still going to make decisions based on this. But I do think that's no different than just being an agent of the cross anywhere we go on any other issue. I found this quote from Ronald Reagan, which I thought was really fascinating. I think he was probably talking about his Star Wars defense. Okay? I think he was talking about his Star Wars defense, but I like it for what we're talking about here. Basically, he's saying this: how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world. At Pizza with Larry, I asked the kids, I go, how many of you saw Independence Day? Right, everybody. Right? I go, what was going on there? They're like, wow, you know, all these aliens came to destroy the Earth. And I go, so up until that invasion, how were people on the Earth, you know, living? And they're very divided, very, you know, us against them. But now you have this outside the planet threat, and we find out we're all humans, right? We're all one race. We all need to be united. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Ken and I have not talked. I did not know this is what he was going to do. This is a lead-in, and it's a little bit of a commercial for the last weekend from Thursday to Monday of July when we're bringing in as artist in residence a guy named John Miltner. Now, some of you may have known of the Human Project, and it was done first really in New York, asking people, what does it mean to be human? Huh. It was a great experience. Well, millennials all know about this project, and they really, this is a guy who has piggybacked on that. He was a part of that one. And the theme for this year here is peace, as you know, and his is a peace project. And the title of his books are Peace of My Mind, P-E-A-C-E, to talk about what brings peace to the whole human race. And he'll be here to show, he'll have pictures, he'll be talking to people about how to tell your story in an authentic way, which is not about, well, I'm from Sweden, it's about, you know, who I am as a human being. So it's really
interesting.
Everything you've given us, it was a really interesting tie-in. You'll want to be here for the Lakeside series he's going to do. He's going to do Monday Musings. We're going to use him in small workshops, and it's exactly this kind of thing. To say, how do we start these kind of dialogues that take us out of our boxes and talk about what is, yeah, what is humanity?
That sounds great. So, wish I could go back.
Yeah,
that's right. Well, let me close with a story about my extended family. So my wife is Japanese American, so we may look the same to you, but we know we come from different cultures. It happens, right? And she's also from Hawaii. That's another subculture, okay? Her grandparents came to Hawaii to help harvest the sugarcane fields. My ancestors came to kind of ride on the coattails of the gold rush, right? And sell groceries to the Chinese workers and that kind of stuff. My grandfather came in 1916, American Baptist missionaries taught him how to speak English without an accent before he came. So he came to be an interpreter, translator at first, and then he was part of a Chinese grocery co-op with my grandmother still in the village in China, right? It's just fascinating when you learn those things, right? But then my older sister and only sister, during high school, she was all into drama, theater arts, so she only dated white guys with cowboy fringe jackets. And then when she married, she's the only one that married Chinese. Like, she shocked us all, right? And then my next brother married the Caucasian from Birmingham, Alabama. Then their marriage ended in divorce. Now he's married to a Jewish American, okay? They have a Eurasian daughter and a black Caucasian adopted son whose birth father was the number one draft pick in the NBA. Right, so yeah, it's interesting.
How can you remember all that?
Oh, it's my family story. So my nephew is 19 years old and he's 6'8½". Okay? And his jersey says Fong. Right? Yeah. So that's really interesting, okay? And then my youngest brother met and married a woman from Guam who's half Filipino, half Guamanian. They have three kids. So backwards, it was Chinese New Year's, and I'm one of those people that I never know when Chinese New Year's is. I'm just so out of it, right? It's my Japanese wife who goes, isn't it Chinese New Year's? Like, is it? So we happen to be home in Sacramento, and my daughter was 2 at the time, and my black nephew is also 2, and they're like the closest in age, so they're really tight. So they're sitting in side-by-side high chairs with those metal trays. Remember those? And so in our house, it's cacophony. Like, there's 1,000 conversations going on at once. So in the midst of this cacophony, I hear my daughter and my nephew going, "Aya, aya," which is like oy vey in Cantonese, okay? And someone gave them chopsticks, and they're pounding on their metal trays going, "Aya, aya." So I'm the only one that's noticing this. I'm like, okay, number one, who taught them that? Because we don't speak Chinese in our house. That's just weird. I go, number two, we're making a virtual Chinese person out of my black Caucasian nephew. Okay, so then I found my parents. I went right over to them and I said, okay, first I have a statement and then I have a question. So they go, okay, what's your statement? I said, out of your 9 grandkids, 6 of the 9 are not 100% Chinese. There's several that are adopted. And the 2 boys carrying the Fong surname are not Chinese at all. Okay? One's black Caucasian, the other one is Chinese Guamanian Filipino who looks Mexican. Okay? So I said, may I just say that you never show any favoritism to just the Chinese ones. You clearly love all your grandkids. I go, that's awesome, right? They go, well, thank you very much, right? And then I go, so here's my question. So since the next generation of our family has already arrived, and the 2 boys carrying our name forward are black Caucasian and Guamanian Filipino Chinese, and all the mothers are not Chinese, why do we, who are Chinese, keep saying this is a Chinese family?
They have the same last name. They have a Chinese
family. We do, except for my sister, she married Chinese, so yeah. But no, it's more complicated than that. And this happens in every group that starts off with the dominant, right? It's just like, we love you as long as you don't make us change, you just become who we are. So, I go, my nephew there, his birth father was from Nigeria, whose father was a diplomat to England. Okay? And it's like, who's teaching him about that part of his story? And how is our family enriched because we now have this flow, right? And so my friends go, okay, I see what you're saying. We're no longer a Chinese American family. So what are we? Okay, so I wasn't prepared for that. I'm just an annoying person, right? So I said, okay, my working title for us is we're an American family, but I'm not happy with that. Then I went back to our church, which I told you is a historically Japanese church that now has a dozen different Asian Pacific Islander groups, white, black, Hispanic, everybody else, okay? And yet the Japanese were making virtual Japanese people out of all the non-Japanese people, including me. I know more words in Japanese than I know in Chinese, okay? And so I go, it's the same thing. It's like, it's not enough for the dominant group to just keep absorbing people into who you originally were. You have to become something you never were before. And that's what took me back to Ephesians chapter 2, where he tore down the walls to create a new humanity in himself. But in order for this to work, the group that starts with the naming rights, this is what rice is called, Gohan. It's like, that's interesting. You know, that's Japanese. It's like, okay, I'll say Gohan. But it's like, no, the fact that even if we have one person who's half Nigerian in our family, then I now am different because we have that in our family circle. So when I travel to these World Christian Congresses and I meet someone with a funny hat from Nigeria, I like to shock them and go, hey, someone in my family's from Nigeria. Like, what? You know, right? But then I feel this connection that I would never have felt before. Okay? So I think in Christ, and this is what I want to leave you with, I think in Christ, that's what it's always supposed to have been. And you can't do anything but start where you start, but don't stay where you start. Right? And even if it's just a mentality that begins to change. Yes?
I have two comments.
Okay. Yeah.
Left.
Huh.
So that kind of changes it too, because it's whoever was left in that particular group.
Yeah, interesting.
Kind of almost restarted things. I don't know if you want to carry that back to the Noah story or whatever you want.
Yeah.
But I would like to say that I prefer to use the word when you have all these blended folks. Instead of saying different, how about just enhanced? How about we have an enhanced family? Because different almost implies separation.
Sure.
And I
like that.
I'm a little tired of the identity thing.
Right.
Because I think sometimes it does separate us a little bit. So let's look at enhanced.
I think it's one of these things, I'll get to you. I think it's a both and. Because I think, like, we'd be too quick to say we're living in a post-racial time. And so even for someone like myself or yourself to say, yeah, there's nothing worth mining from my cultural genetic past, I think it's very informative, but don't stay there, right?
That's why I want to use the word enhanced.
Yeah.
Because different to me implies a little bit of negativity. I don't know why, it just does.
Okay, yeah. Oh, him and then in the back.
I'm a retired pediatrician.
Oh.
Of three-quarters of the population.
Huh.
Going through Europe with the plague.
Plague, sure.
Smallpox, chickenpox, measles, diphtheria, wiped out the human population. And can you imagine two-thirds of the Ludington community dead? Now, just about that means only about a tenth of the houses would be occupied because some families would survive.
Sure.
That is documented in recent written
Interesting.
And when Captain Cook, quote unquote, discovered the Hawaiian Islands, three quarters of the population died.
Measles, right.
They did not have this genetic ability to fight.
Same thing with Native Americans.
Written history.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not talking about
pre-written.
Pre-written. Yeah.
Hmm.
And that's partially true with why the Indians, you know, a lot of the Indians weren't killed by.
Oh, no. No. Disease, right.
Because they left the European continent before some of these measles and smallpox.
Ants, syphilis, and gonorrhea, all that stuff. Yeah.
The other part of this story is I was in medical school when HIV started.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, thank you for that. In the back.
I was going to say, I think, you know, the way that the let's call it the youngest generation, like, you know, my kids, I think 12, 13, the way they view race is very different from the way I view race, and certainly different than the way their grandparents view race. So it's almost, to some extent, because we're in the Bay Area ourselves and pretty culturally mixed, almost non-existent. And they've caught me, your mom, who doesn't say that. Yeah, so
yeah.
More mixed families.
Yeah.
Culture is blending. Like, then you go with the real differences are then these socioeconomic ones, you know, the private school and the public school.
Sure, sure.
So I'd just be curious to hear your thoughts on that in context of this presentation.
So, in fairness to people that have other places to go, we kind of officially.
Yeah.
However, I think Ken's hanging around and everybody can talk to him. We can keep individual conversations and together going. But I think this has been really, really fascinating for everyone.
Thank you.
And hopefully we all take it and